that middle interview.
One album, one record, just with the name, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. The name of the album, So Far, So Good, So What? Yes, that's Megadeth, and that's their third album. And our guest is the guitar player for that album, Mr. Jeff Young. Nowadays, they got the new project with Ellefson, a project by the name of Kings of Thrash. So anyways, before we continue into the interview, let's check out In My Darkest Hour off of So Far, So Good, So What with Mr. Jeff Young on the guitar. So check it out. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. In my hour of need. No, you're not there. As Mustang says there, badass jam right there. An awesome, awesome hit for Megadeth. A radio hit for sure. For us thrash fans, rock fans, metal fans. So anyways, let's go on to our interview with Mr. Jeff Young, guitar great from Megadeth's third album, So Far, So Good, So What. Here's Mr. Jeff Young. Enjoy. What part of the world are you at right now?
I'm in Sunny Lake, Balboa, California.
Nice.
San Fernando Valley side of Los Angeles.
Nice, very cool. How's the weather up there?
Great. I'm actually sitting out on our back lanai right now.
I'm down in Texas, so we got cool. The scorching heat over here.
Feel ya. It gets hot here, too. It's been real hot.
So
tomato plants out back aren't looking too happy about it.
Let's speak Kings of Thrash, first of all. You guys are gearing up for the Mega Years October West Coast Tour, right? How is that coming along?
It's coming along swimmingly, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
We're thrashing about. We've been rehearsing for a bit and definitely running both albums plus some surprises for the encore. And hopefully we'll get one so they can hear some more. In addition to the two albums, we're working on some original stuff.
Nice.
Heading in the studio for the first day on the 29th. Fred, the drummer, and I are going to lay the rhythm guitars and drums down first. We like to do it that way, too. Two-inch analog tape, old-school style.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was one of my questions right there. Can we expect some original stuff, us fans, you know? There you go.
Well, yeah, that's the whole catalyst for this tour, is we already had and have four originals demoed. And, you know, working on vocals and solos and arrangements. And we didn't want to just sit around doing nothing in the meantime, and we'd had so many offers. And we did an ultimate jam here at the Whiskey in Hollywood.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Yeah.
It was the first time David and I had played together on any Megadeth stuff since 1989.
Wow.
Castle Downington Monsters of Rock, which was my last show with the band.
Nice.
And that went so good, and the reaction was so favorable, we're like, heck, let's just do both albums, So Far, So Good, So What. Plus, Killing Is My Business. You know, we've had a lot of requests and mails from friends and fans and insiders over the years saying something like this should happen.
Yeah. So this all started just as a get-together to do original stuff, right? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in the meantime, seems like a fun thing to go out and play for the people and help them get acquainted. Kind of come in through the front door, right?
Yeah, wow.
The stuff they're familiar with. And then we'll hit them. We may even whip out a new original at the shows. We'll see.
Wow, that's so exciting for us fans, you know. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to
do it. Yeah, and the music, it's got a thrashy element. I mean, it's in the title of the project, but it's melodic as well. It's got its own thing. So I think people will dig it and be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I saw the YouTube video for the first rehearsal. Sounded great. Awesome.
Yeah.
You got Chaz.
That's just the first rehearsal.
Yeah.
We've had, that was the first one with Chris. The four of us have been rehearsing a bit. And, you know, obviously really dissecting the records. But that was the first rehearsal with Chris in the room. And we've had two or three since, and we're rehearsing again with him on Sunday, day after tomorrow. And we'll do a few more between. David's over in Europe right now, right, with Elson Soto. And
he'll be back.
And then we'll commence rehearsals with him and the sound man and hop in the tour bus and head down to San Diego and kick this thing off.
That's just awesome. I can't wait to see you guys in Texas.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get...
A lot of people, I know they're talking to Europe and Mexico, and Australia, New Zealand, Japan. So the four dates are just kind of a warm-up, just putting it out there, so to speak.
This is going to turn worldwide for sure. I mean, you guys are world-renowned artists, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't know Chris, David, yourself, you know, you guys... You know, part of Megadeth, you know, us metalheads, you know, everybody knows you guys. So it's going to be a worldwide thing for sure. It's going to blow up, in my prediction, you know.
Yeah, people just keep an open mind. and give the thing a chance. I think they're going to be stoked when they hear the results.
Oh, yeah. So how did Chaz end up with you guys? Was there an audition and the drummer? Was there an audition there? Or did
no,
you guys just...
that Ultimate Jam was the live audition.
Really?
Did you see it? You see the videos?
Yeah, just like that, huh?
Yeah, that was unrehearsed. I mean, we met them a half hour before we played with them.
Wow.
So that, I think that's, I mean, now we've been playing together, and it's way tighter and better than that. I mean, you imagine he was probably nervous the first time playing with us, and we literally went down a quiet hallway upstairs at the Whiskey. I mean, and there's bands playing downstairs, so it's loud and bleeding in, and our guitars are unplugged, but we stood in the hallway and ran through, you know, some bits of the tunes. But that was totally impromptu.
Yeah.
It was like Matchmaker, you know, the Ultimate Jam. They were doing it bi-weekly since the COVID thing, and every week, every bi-weekly event is a different theme, and that theme was the Big Four.
Yeah.
And so they invited me to play, and of course I said, well, I'm doing these originals with David. You want me to ask him? So he flew out from Arizona just for that. We'd never met Chaz, and the gal who organized it, Jessica Chase, we owe her a big thank you for that match made in heaven.
Yeah.
You know, she knew he played in the Megadeth tribute band and the Soundgarden tribute band. So he does, and you can kind of hear it a little, especially when people hear Killing Is My Business live, you can really hear the Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
I was watching a rehearsal tape. I was like, shit, man, you can hear that vibe in his voice.
That's so cool.
I mean, he's got the Mustaine attitude
in
the songs that's needed, but he's got, you know, more husky vibe, which I think the fans are going to dig. Plus, he's just cool on stage. And, yeah, so we got up and did those songs, and that was kind of like, okay, now we got originals. Now this put a whole new wrinkle in the, in the ointment, so to speak.
Wow.
And then the managers and the booking, and once they saw it, I mean, it was kind of like they were saying, you guys got to do this.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay.
So how did Chris Poland come into the mix?
Well, he's our buddy. I mean, he's been on my radio show. You know, David's been in touch with him. And we're doing Killing, so he played a few solos on there. Dave did all the rhythms on that one. And I'll be doing, you know, a lot of Dave's solos. And
yeah.
Chris will come up for the songs he played on, and Chaz does some leads. You know, we all three switch off. So if you can imagine, you know, like a kind of heavy metal thrash version of like how the Allman Brothers and Skinner and those great three guitar bands, even Iron Maiden, right? They got three guitars now.
Oh, yeah.
We're arranging the songs in such a way, somehow, like when you hear Boots, even on that first rehearsal tape, and the fast chromatic descending run with all of us doing it, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds really tight. You know, Chaz and me are doing the and Chris is doing ding dun 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 to keep it more tight, right?
Yeah.
And that brings out the melody of the notes. So by writing counterpoint and writing guitar parts and looking at each part, you know, and sometimes Chaz can just let the guitar hang, you know, Stanley or Chris Cornell style, and just sing.
Wow.
So it gives us a great luxury with the guitars.
Three guitars.
How we're going to orchestrate each song,
That's so interesting. And then you're, you went to school at GIT, right, for music, so that's really going to help right there. I mean, you get to play and orchestrate, how you said, you know?
Yeah.
Wow, it's just super exciting. And had you ever jammed before with Chris or?
No, I was the first day. And it was cool, like the improvs you guys hear on Boots there, those were literally the first, you know, notes we improvised and spit out.
Yeah.
And I thought it came off real cool for first go around. And, you know, we still got 3 weeks or so till the gig. So plenty of time.
Yeah, the first time I saw that that video of your rehearsal, I'm a guitar player here locally in Texas, and nothing at your caliber or Chris's, but you know, just local stuff. But I do understand, you know, scales and things. So when I saw that video, my excitement was I couldn't imagine your sound mixed with Chris's sound. So that's so exciting right there as a guitarist and as a fan. It sounds great. I mean, it sounds very cool to hear two different styles, you know.
Our tones were on the same side of the stage, and we wondered how it worked.
Yeah.
It just works, man. He has more lows and low mids in his tone, not a lot of highs and high mids. And, you know, to even do the Mustaine rhythm stuff, you got to have that, you know.
Yeah, the low end.
Well, the high mid, you got to have the high mids and some highs in there, so our sounds complement each other, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think, and I'm trying to veer more towards the aspects of my playing that are kind of more different than his and complement his, contrast, more, because he does more of the legato kind of Holsworthy vibe, which I love to do as well, and obviously on some of the So Far So Good So What solos, that'll be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also love Steve Morse and, you know, Frank Gambale. And that's kind of what it reminds me of, because Alan Holsworth and Frank Gambale were, like, really great buddies.
Yeah.
And when I kind of pick more like Frank does in the sweep picking and picking every single note, and where Chris is doing more of the legato thing, and I think that blends really well together. And with our sounds, you hear it on the same side of the stage. The frequencies, it just sits well together.
For sure. You can see Ellison's face. He's just, like, super excited, man, to see two different guitar players, you know. Awesome sound mix.
I mean, as far as Megadeth guitar players and lineage, I think this is a bad combo coming together.
Badass, as in badass, yeah.
Plus, Chaz is a great guitar player, too, and he takes some rhythms, or takes some leads, and his rhythms are tight. I've been working with him a lot on those to, like, kind of bring him into how Megadeth plays and picks and fingers and notes.
Yeah, it's a whole other craft there, yeah. So let's go back in time a little here. How old were you when you started playing guitar?
14, but I played viola in first grade for a bit, and saxophone in the school band and whatnot, third to ninth grade. So that gave me a lot of the music theory and how to read music and play with other people.
Treble clef,
albeit sometimes dorky music that your school band conductor would choose. But, I mean, when you're that young, you're like a sponge, right?
Yeah, you're just learning and learning.
Have you ever seen a kid, like, who has bilingual parents, how fast the child picks up the other language?
Right.
You know, both parents.
Yeah.
Compared to if you're an adult and try to learn another language. So it's kind of like that when you're young and stupid and, you know, in grade school, and that kind of stuff really does shape you and help you. And then I discovered guitar at 14, and the rest is history and a mystery.
So what made you go to music school? What convinced you to take more school, you know, after high school?
Well, I read an article on the last page of an issue of Guitar Player magazine. Probably a lot of guys saw. I think it was the first time back in the mid-80s when they wrote about GIT MI. And Tommy Tedesco from the Wrecking Crew was still teaching there. Joe DiOrio and Frank Gambale, Scott Henderson, just a bunch of great teachers. And I said, I want to be there.
Yeah.
I knew it would put me in Hollywood, so it was like killing two birds with one stone, and begged my parents, and they were foolish enough to let me go.
Yeah. This is a dumb question. Did that help you? Of course, musically, it helps you. How did it help you in the streets, get different bands, or...
Oh, being out in that Hollywood?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the teachers at GIT, like I said, Frank Gambale and Scott Henderson and Tommy Tedesco, Joe DiOrio, and a bunch of others that people may not know by name. And plus, I mean, we had guest workshops from Steve Morse and Alan Holsworth and Eric Johnson and Rush. And
wow.
I mean, just so many people came through that school.
Yeah.
You can't help but learn.
Yeah.
And you're around other players, and that's kind of pushing you. And
wow. Very cool.
Yeah. So in your every class throughout the day, as opposed to, you know, I was thinking about getting a classical guitar degree, kind of like what Randy Rhodes wanted to do, but they're making, in a college, they're making you study history and science and math and all this other crap that had nothing to do with music.
Yeah.
And I knew it's stuff that I didn't me to do the job that I wanted to do. So GIT was really the first kind of school I knew about where every class of the day you're doing music.
Yeah. Wow, that's so exciting.
You got your guitar in your lap.
Yeah, I wish I could have gone to college to learn other things, you know. Yeah, that's so exciting. So, I mean, you've talked about the story of how you joined Megadeth. Can you, for people that don't know, can you tell us, I guess, a short version of, I heard a version where you were teaching Jay and then you ended up with the gig, right?
Yeah, the nutshell summary. I've done some interviews this week and
yeah,
there's a ton floating around in the press on us lately, so they may find the more extended story in another interview. But
yeah,
long story short, I was being managed by a rock photographer named Barry Levine, who he did the Angel on Earth as It Is in Heaven album cover, you know, with the upside down logo in the mirror where you see the band no matter which way you turn the album. That was his concept.
Okay.
He did Shout at the Devil, Motley Crue, Girls, Girls, Girls. He did their video for Girls, Girls, Girls while I was living in his house. Jay was living in the house. I was upstairs. He was downstairs. We had a 16-track analog tape recording studio in the house. So we were learning a lot about recording and making songs and writing songs. During that process, he... you know, Barry took me under his wing, and we had a band that we put together around me called Broken Silence.
Okay.
And we actually showcased at the Roxy, had a sold out show of a lot of industry people. Motley Crue was there, the Bangles, Stray Cats dudes.
Wow.
It was a well attended show, and we were close to a deal, but just the chemistry of the band wasn't right. And the singer had a great voice, but he just wasn't a star, you know, the look wasn't there.
Yeah,
he sounded like Steve Perry, kind of. Okay. Meets a little bit of Don Dokken when he could sing, meets Steve Perry. It was a great voice, but the band kind of exploded and Barry and I kind of fell out, and I moved out, and I was playing with Mark Pollan, Chris Pollan's brother.
Okay.
That had nothing to do with how I got the gig. He never mentioned Chris or Megadeth once in the couple few months we were playing together, demoing songs. It was more kind of Gary Moore, John Sykes, John Norm, Thin Lizzy, Euro guitar, shredder kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'd fallen out of contact with Barry. We kind of had a falling out. The band, I quit the band, and a few of the musicians ran away with me. So we were rehearsing with Mark Pollan and making some demos, and one day I decided I was going to bury the hatchet with old Barry, and went over to his place, and we were talking, and the phone rang, and it was Jay Reynolds calling looking for me, which
yeah,
was strange because he didn't know I was going to be there that day. Barry hadn't seen me in a few months, and it was just one of those serendipitous events, right?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm looking for Jeff's phone number. And Barry was kind of freaked out, looked at me like a weird face and handed me the phone. It's Jay Reynolds. Jay said he had an opportunity to talk to me about. I went over to where he was staying in Laurel Canyon, and he offered me $50 an hour to help figure out Chris Poland's solos from Peace Sells and Killing.
Yeah.
Kind of what I'm doing the past few months here, and help him write solos for what was going to be So Far So Good So What, and they only had 2 weeks to finish it, so they were on short, you know, a short string there. So I started teaching him, and again, the rest is history.
Yeah, wow, very cool. So how was it working with a legend like Dave Mustaine?
Was he a legend?
A thrash legend.
It was the best, and it was the worst of times.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that's all I'll say on that note.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read some stories where there was a lot of drugs back then, and not you, but,
and
you know.
Of course,
yeah,
back then, for sure, and that was why my stint in the band was pretty brief.
Yeah.
When I met those guys, I was a straight edge. I don't drink coffee. I don't really drink that much, and maybe an occasional margarita or something.
Yeah.
With a Mexican fiesta, but...
Yeah.
So there was a whole different lifestyle for me.
Yeah.
Kind of what I was prepared for, and the guitar players who I looked up to. So and we're trying to not really talk so much about him in this thing. We're trying to just keep it positive. And
Do your own thing.
The music.
That's good, yeah. I mean, real quick, you were there for a short stint, as you said. But at that time, I do recall, I mean, I would see you guys on MTV, you know, Anarchy.
Anarchy in L.A., yeah.
Anarchy in the U.K.
Headbangers Ball, baby.
Yeah, I remember seeing that and buying the cassette and all that. And did you see a gradual change as far as audiences go, or was it kind of the same, or how did you see things back then?
At the Megadeth shows?
Yeah.
Once we got, you know, a lot of MTV, well, a lot more girls coming to the show.
There you go. That's a plus.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, I mean, we had great gigs opening for Dio and Iron Maiden and, you know, the headlining tours we did with Testament and Warlock.
Nice.
Our album was, I think, the first thrash album to crack the top 20 on Billboard pop charts.
Yeah.
Along with Whitney Houston and Madonna and George Michael and all those people up there, Michael Jackson. We went, I think it entered at 19. I forget how high it went.
Yeah. I remember seeing Anarchy.
That was good. So that meant, you know, we were a good draw for the Dio show. And
yeah,
that led to the Monsters of Rock tour over in Europe. And, you know,
that's when you exited
Japan. Ever, we got to do pretty much all the major markets around the world.
Wow. That was a first for you, right? That was a first kind of thing for you?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's very cool. I read you guys were supposed to record the song Problems by Sex Pistols, but then you didn't.
It was actually already recorded. I mean, they had it there, and they were trying to decide between Anarchy and Problems, and I kept telling Mustaine Problems is way better. It would have been way cooler. But I don't know why they were hell-bent on Anarchy.
Yeah.
But, you know, they released Problems later on. I don't know if it was the same or if they totally re-recorded it.
Yeah.
It was on some box set, I believe.
Yeah, they did it later on Hidden Treasures, I believe. It's a bunch of covers. And yeah. Give us your best gig and your worst gig so far.
With Megadeth or with any band?
Anything, overall, in your career.
Oh, God, man, it's hard to think out that off the top of the head. I mean, I've had so many cool gigs. One that immediately comes to mind isn't a big gig. It was a private party in Malibu last 4th of July. Little duo I play in out here, we played right on the Pacific Ocean at this party. Young couple, they have a lot of money from real estate and beautiful, beautiful home right on the ocean.
Nice.
So we were playing on their back patio, just looking at a glass fence. You know, you're just seeing the cliff and nothing but water.
Nice, wow.
Monsters of Rock, the Castle Donington gig with Iron Maiden, Kiss, David Lee Roth, Megadeth, Guns N' Roses, and Halloween. That was my last gig with Megadeth, so that was in a way a bad gig, but a great gig as well.
Yeah, wow, very cool.
That was the biggest gig I've ever played, like 125,000, 30,000. And people can see that easily going on YouTube and just pull up the Paradise City Guns N' Roses video from halfway through when they get on the all the black and white footages that day.
Nice.
That show, yeah.
Huge show.
Actually, you can even see us on the side of the stage watching with our arms crossed.
Oh, yeah?
You see me and Chuck and our booking agent. I see him in there, Andy Summers. Not to be confused with Andy Summers from The Police.
Yeah. Well, so how about...
I mean, there's been a lot of cool, you know, different... I played Sebastian Bach's wedding recently up in San Jose. I mean, just like I played Rock of Ages in Vegas, the Guitar One role that Joe Hoekstra from Whitesnake originated on Broadway.
Yeah.
That was a really cool run. I got to play with Michael Anthony from Van Halen. That's on my YouTube channel.
Nice.
Four old Van Halen songs. That's a dream come true.
Wow.
Plus, to get a lot of praise from his tech, Doogie, and him, and saying Michael loved you, and he said you did the Van Halen on point. Even added your own stuff in there, so that was definitely a bucket list.
Yeah.
But then there's been a lot of that, you know, just cool little opportunities here and there to play with, you know, cool musician stuff at the NAMM show and, you know, the Randy Rhoads Remembered tour that we did with, you know, Rudy Sarzo. Joined us on that, so we're playing Ozzy songs, Randy's licks with Rudy there on bass.
Cool.
That stuff's all on my YouTube.
We'll look into it. Cool. So how about any solo music? Any more, anything in the works for some Jeff Young stuff?
Yeah. Go on my Bandcamp, jeffyoungsongs.live. I think my lead link is that, jeffyoungsongs.live. I'm releasing an instrumental album, like my first all-instrumental thing. Three of the tracks are already up there on my Bandcamp.
Okay, cool. We'll check them out.
Yeah, jeffyoungmusic.live. And three of my tunes are up there, Monsoon, In the Flesh, and Slow Burn.
Slow Burn.
Great. Again, that's Monsoon, In the Flesh, and Slow Burn. Got some great musical guests joining me on those tracks.
I'm familiar with Slow Burn.
Any of their names, just go check it out and listen to them. And feel free to include any of their names and any of the stuff and the link and whatnot.
I'm familiar with Slow Burn. That's a badass song. Badass, cool job.
Yeah, that chick is a beast, dude. And she's beautiful. The chick that played pedal steel, lap steel on that. And the way she played is so psychedelic and cool. It's like turned it into almost like a trance, blues, psychedelic kind of trip. I really like how that song turned out.
Oh, yeah.
Not really cool. She plays with Shania Twain.
Okay.
Which is weird, right? That's
a different.
And some other cool people. But I met her when I was teaching at MI at GIT back in the 2000s for a year and a half or so. I taught there. And one of my students, when he graduated, ended up getting a band with her. And, you know, I saw the videos he had sent me with her, and I always kept my eye on her, and I knew she got the Shania Twain residency in Vegas. And when I always dreamed of having a pedal steel on a track, and that track kind of ended up being the one.
Yeah, wow. Small world, huh? Very cool. So you mentioned...
I was stoked how that came out. I think all three of those tunes are all different. They're all like different kind of little movies in themselves.
Yeah, very cool songs. Yeah, people should check them out. You mentioned the radio show Music Without Boundaries. Is that still happening? You still got that?
There's 11 years of archives at Jeff Young. I don't know if I still got that link on Spreaker.
Okay.
I can just go search Music Without Boundaries. Probably on Google it'll come up. It's on Spreaker Broadcast Network. I've had guests from... gosh, John Five to Steve Harris' daughter, Lauren Harris, to Ronnie Platt, the new singer from Kansas, who's incredible.
Yeah.
To Pat Travers, came on my show on his birthday.
Wow.
Of all days, when he could have been doing anything but that. I've been really fortunate. I've had ex-Department of Defense and CIA whistleblowers, you know, speaking truth to power, just all kinds of different, we've had shows live from a green carpet at a pet event, raising, you know, money for pet awareness. We've had business seminars. Just, it's been a really eclectic, diverse show. People can go back and find lots of cool guests. And I've had James Lomenzo on the show, Kiko Laredo, Chris Poland, Nick Menza. You know, full episodes with Chris and Nick. Easy to find.
Wow, very cool. I gotta check it out.
And I'm on a temporary hiatus with the show, just being so busy, but I can be back, you know, at any time. Look out. So just watch that speaker wall. But there's 11 years. Most people don't even know about the show. It was kind of an underground cult thing.
Yeah.
I had a great following, lots of listeners, and depending on the week and who the guest was.
Yeah.
But people have got, there's still, you know, 11 years of episodes that people can discover there.
So for people listening, you can find it under Music Without Boundaries, right?
On Spreaker, Spreaker. Yeah,
like speaker with an R, Spreaker, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with the app,
Spreaker with an R in there, yeah.
Spreaker. Any other project you want to mention that you might want to touch up on?
Soon releasing a song with this duo I mentioned earlier, Jennifer Jen. The song is called Gypsy Soul. Being mixed by Luce Lemert, the same guy who mixed David Elson's Lucid project.
I love Lucid, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Germany, so we've got it up on the board over there now, and I've been just kind of sitting with the mix for a while before we put it out. It starts out on dobro guitar. The song was kind of influenced by Chris Whitley, who I love, and he's kind of a cult guitar player, great dobro singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
His big album was produced by the same guy, Daniel Leonis, who produced Octoon Baby for U2.
Okay.
He died of a heroin overdose, but was a huge influence, and I recommend buying every one of Chris Whitley's albums. And
go check it out, yeah.
Digesting them thoroughly. But so the song was kind of inspired by his dobro playing, and with the vocals, it's kind of a cross between maybe Fleetwood Mac, AC/DC, with some funk in there.
Wow.
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, where the Ohio Players hailed from, so there's always been kind of a funk thing in my blood, which is kind of cool because Killing Is My Business has some cool funk riffs on there.
Oh, man.
That people, I think, are going to notice when Kings of Thrash plays plays Killing Is My Business, the song, and is it Skull Beneath the Skin verse is pretty funky.
Yeah. So speaking of those albums, Killing's My Business and So Far So Good. So is Chris playing on So Far So Good stuff, or he just plays only on the Killing?
Right? He'll come out for the end of the show, for the for the Killing stuff, maybe throughout the show, because he didn't play on every song.
Yeah.
And he'll for sure be on the songs that he's on and the encores.
Okay. Wow, that's just super, super interesting. So is Chaz doing the Mustang parts?
Chaz is doing all the other guitars on So Far. I'm doing some of Mustang's leads. We just, like kind of how Richie Faulkner and Priest came in, and he does some of K.K. Downing's leads and some of Glenn Tipton's. And wow. It's a whole new vibe. That's kind of how they're seeing me in this role.
Yeah. Wow, this is a complete treat for us fans. Super exciting. Yeah. Very exciting. Okay, before we let you go, would you like to send a message to your fans listening to this podcast?
Oh, just everybody out there in Radio Land, thanks for all the love and views of our Kings of Thrash videos and comments and feedback. We really, really appreciate it. We're working so hard to put a really killer, kick-ass show together for everybody that celebrates the music and delivers it in a really positive, heavy musical light. So we hope we're going to get around to a ton more cities than just these initial four. So stay tuned, kingsofthrash.com, and send us any feedback, messages, and hope to see you out at a show sometime soon.
Perfect. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for making time, and hope to see you on tour soon. And I can't wait to hear original stuff, yeah.
Yeah, cool. We're working on it.
Awesome, man.
Hot
can't wait.
And heavy, buddy. Hot and heavy. Talk to you soon.
All right, Jeff. Appreciate that.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Don't forget to support Kings of Thrash, which includes the three Megadeth greats, Ellefson, Young, and Poland, of course. Three of the five members. And check out their socials. We'll leave it up to you to find out the other members of Kings of Thrash, which are all badass guys, you know, of course. Find out the name of the singer, guitarist, and the drummer great of that that Ellefson and these guys recruited. It's your homework. Check it out, man. Kings of Thrash. And support them. Buy their merchandise. Go out there and see them live. Right now, they're doing some live gigs out there in the West Coast and so on and so forth. Anyways, hopefully they'll do some more dates out in the States, out in Texas, out in New York, Ohio, Chicago, and everywhere so people can check out Kings of Thrash. And anyways, thank you, Mr. Jeff Young. Thank you for making time off of your busy schedule. During rehearsals and all that, he made time to do this interview. So thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it 1 million times. So anyways, as far as our friends that download and check out That Metal Interview podcast, thank you, guys and girls. Thank you for supporting. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell on YouTube to check out our channel. And thank you for enjoying it on your favorite way of enjoying it on digital format. Thank you on behalf of James, your friend. Don't forget to keep it metal.
That Metal Interview.